the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey, good morning, and thanks for joining us today here on AgNet West Farm City Newsday. Folks in Santa Barbara are gearing up for the Santa Barbara County Farm Day. It's a free in-person event welcoming everyone to, quote, meet the hands that feed you. Farm tours are offering local goods that will take place next month on September 18th. You can take a look at the theme and the digital farm map by visiting santabarbaracountyfarmday.com. Moving right along into today's program headlines, Brian German is talking with us about California regulation costs and the impacts on producer operations. We've also got a report detailing a research project that looks at drought impacts on rangeland conditions. And I'm starting off today's program with comments from Farm Bureau President as he saw firsthand the crisis at the southern border. Let's jump right in. American Farm Bureau President Zibby Duval recently toured farms located along the southern border of the United States. He wanted a firsthand look at what's concerning farmers. State Farm Bureaus are seeking help with safety of farms as more people continue to make the cross from Mexico into the U.S.
We put together a letter to send to President Biden about our concerns. In a very brief time period, all 50 states and Puerto Rico signed on to that letter, and we sent it to the president, which generated a phone call between the four border state Farm Bureau presidents and representatives from the White House.
And what he saw during his visits was alarming.
We've seen how serious this situation is for our farmers. It is heartbreaking to see and hear some of the stories that I've heard this week. You know, they've experienced people coming across our border for decades, but never at the level that we're seeing it today. Our farmers and ranchers are worried about their safety and their family's safety and their employees' safety.
This was just the first part of this report. Stay tuned to AgNet West and this radio station as we will air the second portion later in the week. But for now, let's take a listen to AgNet West Brian German with these next reports.
Regulatory costs on California production appear to be bucking the trend of what types of operations are impacted the most. Professor of Agribusiness at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, Lynn Hamilton, explained that in a recent analysis of regulatory costs for ag producers, it appears that bigger operations are actually being affected on a larger scale.
We were surprised by that. We had seen in our initial study in 2012 that small farmers actually bore a higher burden of regulatory costs on a per acre basis. And our thought was that, well, larger farms are able to maybe be a little bit more efficient with things like training. In some cases, they have a staff member who just comes in and does all of that, or they pay their insurance agency to come in and, you know, handle those trainings. And so we thought, well, the bigger entities have, you know, they just have a more efficient process and they're able to spread that fixed cost of regulation over a larger number of acres. And you know, and that from an economic standpoint made sense. But what changed in the more recent study in 2018 is a couple of these pretty big, costly regulations, notably the Food Safety Modernization Act and the Affordable Care Act. Those are scaled to hit larger growers more. So if you're a small enough producer, you're actually exempt from complying with Affordable Care Act regulations in terms of providing health insurance to your workers. If you sell below a certain number, a certain level of, if you have below a certain number of sales, you're exempt from most of the Food Safety Modernization Act requirements. So we saw that some of these new regulations really hit the larger growers at a much higher level. And so we saw that large growers this time had a much higher cost of regulatory compliance on a per acre basis.
USDA recently granted $500,000 for a project to better understand the drought response of rangelands. Associate Professor of Ecology in the Department of Plant Sciences at UC Davis, Jennifer Funk, described the underlying purpose behind the grant project.
One of the things that we're really interested in doing is restoring rangelands that can be resilient to drought in the future, because we know that California, it's already hotter and drier, and it's going to potentially get hotter and drier in the future. So, you know, if you are working in a rangeland that's been degraded, maybe recently burned or damaged or invaded by noxious weeds, and you want to restore the vegetation, you know, what species should we be planting? Or even what populations of certain species should we be planting? So the goal of this project really is to think more broadly about developing a model to our framework for thinking about drought tolerance in rangelands and trying to use these functional traits to try to predict which species or populations are going to be drought tolerant. So the idea is that we can go into a regional flora, look at their characteristics of all these different species, and choose species that we know are going to be really great to plant if rangelands get hotter and drier in the future.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian. It is time for us to head out for a short break. We'll be right back with more of the day's national headlines and local reports, including our livestock report from Randall Wiseman, when we return. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money. With increasing water scarcity, ask Wild Eye's qualified staff about their simple, easy-to-install and use monitoring systems to help you keep track of your precious water resources and also be Sigma compliant. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today online at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. In today's national headline, sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. A sharp turnaround in agricultural economic conditions and lasting support from government programs is boosting farm income and loan repayment rates. Both increased from a year ago at the fastest pace on record. The Kansas City Federal Reserve Bank released its quarterly Ag Credit Survey. The survey shows the improvement in farm finances eased credit issues and contributed to softer demand for farm loans. With support from a strong farm economy and historically low interest rates, farm real estate values rose 10% from a year ago, the largest increase since 2013. The outlook for profit opportunities in 2021 remained strong for most farmers as commodity prices remained well above recent years. Conditions in the cattle industry remain somewhat weaker, however, and drought continued to hinder conditions for some farmers and ranchers. Nearly all banks in the KC Fed District reported that production expenses for crop and livestock producers increased, and cash rental rates also increased, which could pressure margins going forward. The European Commission decided to extend the implementation deadline for its new health certificate requirements to January 15, 2022. The International Dairy Foods Association says the announcement backs off on threats to shut down U.S. dairy exports to EU member states, as well as transshipments of U.S. dairy products through the European Union. IDFA and U.S. officials consider the certificate requirements, requiring animal health monitoring and veterinarian sign-off, among other requirements, to be burdensome and in conflict with international standards set by the World Organization for Animal Health. IDFA says the EC's extension provides U.S. and European officials with enough time to complete their discussions and determine appropriate implementation procedures for U.S. exports. IDFA President and CEO Michael Dyke states, quote, "We are grateful for the support and intervention of the Biden administration to resolve this matter and hope the U.S. government will continue working with IDFA to help U.S. dairy gain access to the EU market," unquote. These headlines are brought to you by NAFB and sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Now back to the show.
You're listening to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Randall Wiseman with today's livestock report.
Well, in today's livestock news, a part of the 2021 Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA trade show last week in Nashville, Tennessee, was the Cattle Facts Outlook Seminar. During the event, Cattle Facts said their forecast is for record beef demand along with prospects for tighter supplies. We had a chance to catch up with Kevin Good, Vice President of Industry Relations and Analysis at Cattle Facts, and we talked about these factors along with their forecast for cattle prices.
Sure. Well, I think there's a good message to deliver this year, and you know, coming out of the pandemic the last year and a half, I think there are some bright spots as we think about the cattle business. Beef demand's record high. It's as good as it's been in 30-plus years. So there's plenty of dollars in the system. You know, we're starting to see values start to move higher. You know, yearling values the highest they've been since 2018. Some of the calf contracts we've seen here for the next 60, 90 days, you know, they're as good as we've seen since 2018 as well. Cull-cow prices highest since 2017. Fed market's still in a rut. We all understand that. We still got the backlog of cattle we couldn't harvest last year, and they're still on the front end. We're getting in better shape. We're placing less cattle. So over time, we do think we'll gain some leverage and see these cattle values move higher.
What are you all anticipating on that fed cattle rut, as you put it? I mean, what kind of a timeline do you think that'll finally turn itself around?
Yeah, if you look at it, you know, you still have an on-feed number. It's a percent below a year ago. It's still a couple percent above the five-year average. But it's about a million head smaller than it was on February 1st. Typically, there's some seasonality there. Typically, it'd be down about a half a million. So you have gained ground since the first of the year. We've placed less cattle May, June, July. We think we do that again in August. You know, gradually as we work from here to the end of the year, we do think we'll see the front-end supply get in better shape, leverage improve for the cattle industry, and prices move higher.
Okay, Kevin, what's your prognosis for the next few months into the next year for the cattle market?
You know, you're already starting to see it. You know, you're seeing a lot of optimism. You can start with where the futures markets are at, both for live cattle and also feeder cattle. They're the highest they've been since 2015. So the market's anticipating a higher trend. Some of the video auctions that we've seen for fall delivery on calves in particular, they're trading at, you know, $20-$30 a hundredweight, easily higher than they did in both 2019 and 2020. So you can see the direction of the market. You know, again, the Fed market's probably going to be the last to see that, just because that's where the bottleneck is on the front end of the Fed market. But you can see it in the yearlings and calves. They're starting to trend. So we're pretty optimistic that, you know, if you go compare this year, on average, compared to 2022, we're suggesting that you're going to see a Fed market that averages about $15 a hundredweight higher, yearling market $20 higher, and a calf market about $30 higher. So we're optimistic that we'll have a pretty big step up price-wise as we go over the next 12 to 18 months.
Again, that was Cattle Facts' Kevin Good. To learn more, go to their website, cattlefacts.com. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
Thanks, Randall. And in more agriculture news, emergency rural healthcare funds are now available. Up to $500 million in grants are now available for rural entities seeking support for local healthcare facilities who've been impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. USDA's Rod Bain has comments from our Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack in this next report.
Designed to make an impact for rural healthcare facilities, tribes, and communities in areas such as COVID-19 vaccines, healthcare services, and nutrition assistance. Part of Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack's Thursday visit to Minnesota, as he announced
a series of grants to expand access to healthcare and to provide assistance for rural healthcare facilities and clinics that have had to deal with some difficult challenges as a result of the pandemic.
The Recovery and Impact grants, up to $500 million total, originate from the American Rescue Plan Act. Applications for both types of grants are being accepted through October 12th. More details about these grants are available through the Federal Register, and the application guidelines are available online at www.rd.usda.gov/ERHC. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
And it's time for us to head out for a short break. We'll be right back with more of the day's agriculture news and farm features when we return. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money. With increasing water scarcity, ask Wild Eye's qualified staff about their simple, easy-to-install and use monitoring systems to help you keep track of your precious water resources and also be SGMA compliant. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today online at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture. Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. For today's interview segment, we're taking a listen to our friends over at the Vineyard team who are talking with Dave Olson of Sustainable Growing Solutions, who's taking a look at how we can improve soil quality with microbes.
Dave Olson, welcome to the show. Excited to have you on and talk about root inoculations. And, you know, for our listeners, we've had a little bit of trouble getting together, but the benefit of that is it's given me a little bit more time to think about our topic. And it's a topic that I'm really excited about because I think about some of the parallels with vine health and our own body health and what we have learned, say, in the past couple of decades in terms of how important our gut microbe interactions are. And, you know, I think we're just kind of breaking the surface on that research. And in a similar vein, we are starting to see some really, really important results of controlling the microorganism balance in the root zone interaction in a very similar way. So excited to have you on to talk about this with us, Dave. So why don't you start off telling us a little bit about root inoculations and why we might do them and kind of a little bit about how they're done.
Sure. Well, first, your analogy regarding the human biology and plant soil microbiology is perfectly apt because the microbes actually perform many of those functions that you said that we've obviously recently become aware of, that they're a big part of our immune system, and it's exactly the same way with the plants. So the soil microbiome is something that, because we've learned so much in the recent past, I think the importance of it is elevated such that it really should be thought of as an integral part to our pest management program, as well as an integral part to our fertility program, or our final product quality program. So microbes contribute in all those ways. So if you have a algae in the soil, they contribute substantially to processing nutrients and so improving the nutrient status of the plant. So that means you can have a healthier plant that's less disease and pest susceptible because of better nutrition. You are reducing your fertilizer budget, but you're also reducing kind of the opportunity for, say, fertilizer runoff and things like that, which, of course, is a big deal here, especially on the Central Coast growers.
Sure.
And the microbes also contribute a lot to the physiological process of the plant. So they produce things like plant growth regulator, changes that are happening with a plant all through the season. Those hormones that the plants or the microbes are contributing to the plant make it much, much more efficient. And similarly, some of those things actually contribute to the stress tolerance of the plant. So when you have those really peak, you know, high heat days, the plant get all droopy. If you have a healthy biology supporting that plant, you actually see that plant continuing photosynthesis hot peak periods, which means we're recapturing those photosynthetic, and we're also maintaining that respiration, which maintaining respiration is a critical quality component to the fruit. What it'll shut down respiration of the leaves first, but if it gets too hot, it actually respiration of the fruit. When you get hot fruit, you start breaking down internal structures, you start converting some of the vegetative type acids into senescence type acids, So you start growing up your sugar to acid ratio and your fruits, and then you even can start caramelizing sugars and things like that. So big, you know, quality defects can happen in the absence of the biology supporting the plants for that. So those are some of the reasons why we should be interested in having good biology. But the reason why that's actually not occurring all the time for everybody is many of the necessary farming practices that we do in viticulture are not conducive to our soil biology. So when we test a soil in a commercial production environment, most of the time we find 10% of what a good healthy population would be, or it's not infrequent that we see something that's like a millionth of a healthy biology,
right,
which actually is unfunctional and it's broken. And so that's one of the reasons to think about doing an inoculation, is to start restoring that.
For all the direct benefits of the microbes and their interaction with the plant itself, those are, I think, easy to realize for our listeners. But I think that, you know, another way of looking at it is in terms of that area, that root soil interaction zone. If you don't have the right organisms there taking up those spaces, it leaves the opportunity for other organisms to come in that are probably not as beneficial. So I think, like our gut health, there's an element of taking up and occupying that space and almost displacing other organisms that might come in and maybe be happy themselves, but not be contributing to the vine health in that way.
Yeah, actually, so what you're describing is the rhizosphere, you know, so the biology that immediately surrounds that root. And it does a tremendous number of things. So it does all those other functions that I was talking about, but it also buffers that root. So as you say, it can take up sites that could otherwise be occupied by either detrimental or pathogenic microbes. And it also creates a buffer that reduces electrons through the cells. Mm-hmm. So you know, if you had, say, salt pressure causing a lot of stress to the plant, it's actually part of the function of that biology around the root is to protect it from that osmotic pressure. So yes, just the biology in general is doing a ton of stuff for the roots. There's been some fascinating research just recently published where it's showing actually how the microbes are feeding the plant. But this is the first time just of imagery showing how the microbes actually enter through the opening at the end of the root hair and so cycles the microbes around. The microbes will have all these nutrients in them. The microbes actually drop their outer shell as they're riding through the vascular system, and they actually get absorbed inside the cells of the plant and are getting circulated around inside the plant or the cell, feeding nutrients and enzymes and things like that. Mm-hmm. Then the plant, once it's the microbe reform that shell, it spits the microbe back out. Actually, it produces more microbes during that process, and it spits it back out in the soil for it to do more work, collect more nutrient in.
Like a delivery service. It's incredible.
It is. Well, that's the other thing about the microbe-root interactions that are so fascinating is, so we know that the plant will do excess photosynthates, so it's producing starches and sugars that it's not going to use for itself, but what it does is it puts those out as exudates through the roots. So it's feeding the microbes. So it's building that microbe population. But what we're discovering, it's the greater scientific knowledge base, is that the plant's actually tailoring those compounds to direct the biology to do specific functions. So we're just starting to local signalers are. So a few of them, we already know what they are, and there are some products that are starting to manipulate that kind of thing. It's a finite language, but the elegant part of it is the plant is directing the biology to perform the function that it needs the most.
Yes.
So that's one of the reasons we like to do some of the foliar applications that we do, because we can actually push that plant into that happy excess photosynthetic status to cause that root flush. And so that starts this beneficial cascade of biology towards the thing that the plant sees the most. So as an example, we can do plant tissue analysis or sap analysis and look at what the nutrient status of the plant is before and after a foliar, and we'll see stuff significantly improve in nutrient status in the plant for nutrients we didn't put on.
Right.
It's like, hey, where did all that extra zinc come from, or iron, or wow, you know, look at the huge bump we got in potassium or phosphorus.
Yeah.
And the only difference is we did the foliar, we made the plant happy, it produced excess of exudates at the roots, fed the microbes, so the microbes responded and gave the plant what it needed most.
Again, this was just a portion of the podcast. You can listen to the full episode by visiting vineyardteam.org. It's now time for us to take a short break. We'll be right back with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money. With increasing water scarcity, ask Wild Eye's qualified staff about their simple, easy-to-install and use monitoring systems to help you keep track of your precious water resources and also be Sigma compliant. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today online at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. In today's national headline, sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. Food prices rose again in July, according to the latest Consumer Price Index. The food index increased 0.7% in July as five of the major grocery store group indexes rose, and the food away from home index increased 0.8%. The index for food at home also rose 0.7% as the index for meats, poultry, fish, and eggs continued to increase. The index for cereals and bakery products, which declined in June, rose 1.2% in July, its largest one-month increase since April 2020. The index for other food at home rose 0.8% in July, also the largest monthly increase since April 2020. The index for non-alcoholic beverages rose 0.7% in July, and the index for dairy and related products advanced 0.6%. The index for fruits and vegetables was the only major grocery store group index to fall in July, declining 0.9% after rising 0.7% in June. The index for fresh fruits fell 1.8% over the month. These headlines are brought to you by NAFB and sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Now back to the show.
You're listening to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West, and now here's Brian German with more local news.
The UC Cooperative Extension Rice Yield Contest is back again for 2021. The yearly contest first began back in 2015 as an opportunity for rice producers and researchers to share information about rice production and to recognize the farmers who've achieved the highest yields in the state. Completed entry forms for this year's contest will need to be submitted by Wednesday, August 25th, the day of the annual Rice Field Day at the Rice Experiment Station in Biggs. There will also be an opportunity to sign up for the contest at the Field Day. The winner of the contest will receive a new John Deere Gator, which has been made possible by several industry sponsors. Some changes have been made to this year's contest rules so that participation is as minimally disruptive to the harvest process. Entries will need to be in a field of at least 20 contiguous acres in size, and contestants will pick a 10-acre portion within the field to enter into the contest. More information is available at the UC Rice blog. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
A new USDA grading dashboard for beef, lamb, and veal producers offers data resources for all producers regardless of size and their efforts to market their commodity. USDA's Rod Bain has more with Agriculture Marketing Service Associate Deputy Administrator Taylor Cox in this report.
USDA's recently rolled out grading dashboard is designed for producers and livestock stakeholders to learn more about beef, lamb, and veal price discovery and market information. This tool has similarities to IT dashboards used by large production and processing companies. That, according to Taylor Cox of the Agricultural Marketing Service. Yet he adds,
the smaller producer, they don't have those IT teams. So as we built this internal product, we certainly had in mind that small producer being able to use this tool. It's a historical tool. It has 10 years of data in there and can certainly use that as a production and marketing resource.
More information about and access to AMS's grading dashboard for beef, lamb, and veal is available by going to www.ams.usda.gov and typing in the search bar the keywords grading dashboard. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. Get even more connected by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching at AgNet West, and our team of Brian German at Brian German AgNet West and Danielle Leal with at D Leal AgNet West. This has been Farm City Newsday by AgNet West.